Hello, and welcome to the Apple Insider Podcast. This is Wesley Hilliard speaking, and our sponsors this week are Backblaze and Fast Growing Trees. It's been a weird week in Apple news, with everyone focused on Apple Car and the very quiet arrival of a new Mac. How you feeling, William? Apple abandoned your dream project and had kind of a disappointment announcement week. We haven't really had the Monday through Friday revealing of everything we've ever wanted. How's it going over there?
Yeah, I'm going to admit I cried last night. Yeah, it was the Apple. Actually, no, yesterday I worked out. Yesterday I was driving to London and Oxford and all sorts of things. I drove for about 5.5, maybe 6 hours. And it was murderously boring in traffic, except CarPlay was brilliant. So every now and again, I was thinking, that's good enough for me. I'll never be able to afford an Apple Car anyway. They've made the right decision. Let's have CarPlay improved, make my life better, and also maybe if I could cut down on the driving a bit. But I don't think that last bit's down to Apple.
No. Right. Yeah, it could be decades before we are just relaxing in our car, taking naps and playing with our iPads, but... Let's get this new Mac out of the way. It's kind of interesting that there's nothing really to talk about here. There's a couple of new features. First of all, are you buying the M3 MacBook Air 13 and 15 inch?
No. If I were in the market, I think I'm almost certain it's the one I would go for. I do quite a bit of video editing, so that's always meant that the MacBook Pro would be the better option for me. But in this case, feels like they're closer and closer. So. With that price difference, maybe. But I have an M1 14-inch MacBook Pro, which is the best Mac I've ever had. And I realize M3 is better than M1, but it's not going to be enough to get me to change. I'm tempted.
We're both in the same boat, right? We're both on M1 Pro MacBook Pros. And
yeah, except, no, hang on, let's see. I am truly on it. You have one chucked in your corner of the kitchen or something. I think you use it as a tray, don't you, instead of a proper Mac. Yeah, so, yeah.
It's on a bookshelf, but we can get to that in a little bit. I was briefly tempted because M3 introduces some cool features for, like, gaming with the ray tracing, and it would just be a better performance as far as general productivity, whereas M1 Pro is great, but I'm not taking full advantage of that chipset, so I could easily run on an M3, and the smaller form factor, it's nearly a pound lighter, too. So it would have been a cool trade-off, but then I realized my MacBook Pro is a couple years old. I could maybe sell it for $1,200 if I'm lucky, maybe $1,000. So I'd be out a few $100s for the lesser MacBook Air. And then it's also being more thermally throttled, and there's trade-offs there. I might as well just keep this one, especially again, since it's just sitting on a shelf. I don't think I would notice any practical difference, except maybe in my backpack I would have a pound less with me.
And the screen's bigger. 15 instead of 14.
Well,
I remember the difference between 13 and 14, so I assume 15 would feel as big again.
I would get the 13 inch, actually, just to go the smallest, cheapest route, because what I'm using my Mac for now is a view inside of the Vision Pro, and so I don't need the ProMotion mini LED backlit display. I don't, you know, need all the flashbang whistles and all that stuff. Like, I really could just use a Mac Mini, but I want it to travel too, and I still want to be able to pop it open and use it as a laptop if need be. Like, if I'm traveling somewhere and maybe something comes up at work that my iPad just is going to run into a wall, I can pull out a MacBook real quick and get it done. I don't want to have to deal with external displays or tricking a Mac Mini into being headless. And then a Mac Mini is not that much more portable, if not less portable, than a MacBook Air. So all of that said, I think I'm sticking with my 14 inch MacBook Pro. But just to get on with the features, do you know what this thing does differently than other MacBook Airs?
I thought I did too. You said that about gaming and ray tracing, and I thought, I have no idea what the difference is. I presume it just renders things better, or depth or something. Is that what ray tracing gives you?
Well, ray tracing is this fun thing in physics where in video games you have something called global illumination, where you can tell it where the sun or the main light source is, and it casts shadows. Previously in video games, it would basically all be preset. They would kind of draw their shadows manually, and it was time consuming to get really in depth on the shadows. So they would just kind of cast a few things to make it look okay, but not get it. It was all pre-rendered, pre-thought shadows kind of thing. At this time of day or in this building, the shadow's going to cast in this direction. Well, with ray tracing, they're literally bouncing light off of surfaces based on materials and reflectivity in real time. So they're tracing the light through space in order to get natural, actual luminescence throughout a room. So if a light source hits an object, or if your character walks in front of a light, now it's doing better jobs of casting shadows and light in real time. And that is intensive.
Goodness.
Unless you have a chip specifically built inside of the M3 to handle it on a hardware level, and it makes it so much faster, so much more efficient, that video games can look a lot better and not need as powerful as a processor.
I do realize that I kind of tune out when games are mentioned. You know, at WWDC, it's like, all right, so it's going to be games, it's going to be somebody from some game, it'll be very exciting. That's when I make a cup of tea. But I really thought ray tracing was some Apple executive's name, and now I've learned.
Well, ray tracing is useful outside of gaming. It has gaming applications, but graphics tools and things where you're building 3D objects. Again, that hardware acceleration. There's also hardware accelerated mesh shading, which is basically texture mapping, where you're adding textures to objects, and it's going to do it much faster. So those two in tandem just, again, make things much better. The M3 by no means should be able to run modern video games like Resident Evil 4, but with these techniques, they're able to do it much better, much more efficiently. And while it's not as pretty as maybe a PlayStation 5, it's doing quite well with what is a passively cooled chipset inside of a MacBook Air. But the true new feature that's exciting for some people, that's also coming to the 14-inch MacBook Pro with M3, is the ability to run two displays in clamshell.
That does appeal. As I sit to you right now, I have a giant widescreen monitor behind me and the MacBook in front, and it would be quite nice to just plug them together. And there's no reason I can't. It's fiddly enough reaching around the back of my desk for the cables that I don't bother. And I quite like the idea of just one setup doing it all. It's two screens, no waiting.
It's useful. I don't have two displays on my desk. I did for a moment, but it was used for two computers, rather than having two displays running off of one computer. But it's a useful feature, especially if you're going to use your Mac in clamshell at home at your desk. It also makes the lesser display of the MacBook Air less noticeable. You don't have to care about it as much because you're not looking at it. You just want to buy it for the M3's power and take it with you when you need to as a MacBook, versus buying a desktop. So, again, all that's very interesting. I also saw there was a story about how the distribution of Mac sells, and the percentages are wild. Did you see this? We'll have to add it to the show notes.
Yes, but I was perturbed. The data that was presented claimed to be for all US Mac sales across 2023. But since Apple doesn't release that data, it must have been researched in some other way, and the research company just didn't say how they did it. So is it a survey? Is it one state extrapolated out? I thought the numbers were surprising, but I don't trust them enough yet. It's like I'm intrigued rather than believing yet. Have you seen any more than I have?
No, but as we've discussed before, statistics are mostly a lie.
Yes, that's true.
The numbers are possibly accurate. It depends on the sample size and where they're sampling from. So maybe they went to a Mac distributor, not Apple, and requested the data from them and worked together to extrapolate this information and found this pattern. And if the store is big enough, if it's one of the major distributors, maybe they have enough varying data to basically say, this is big enough to say this is what the global numbers look like. So I just thought that was interesting. Basically, I can't find it off on a whim. We didn't put it.
Well,
in the
thing
notes.
I remember is I think the Mac Pro sells better than the Mac Mini or the Mac Studio. In fact, the Mac Mini and the Mac Studio are both on 1% of US Mac sales, and the Mac Mini is so handy for so many people, mm-hmm. and it's also the cheapest Mac. That was the first thing that made me question their pie chart of this
right.
thing. I was looking, where is the Mac Mini?
Unless it was gathered based on the last year's data, which wouldn't tell us much because it hasn't been updated in the last year. So no one's buying the old Mac Mini currently. They bought them all when they first released the M2 version, and they haven't touched it since. That could be the problem. Right. Also, just the fact that we already knew MacBook Air was the most popular selling device, and this kind of confirmed it in its own way. So we'll have to get that in the show notes. The numbers are interesting anyway.
Do you think that's the same reason then for the Mac Studio being low, that that hasn't been updated with M3, has it?
Perhaps, but also desktops are kind of dead in the modern way of doing things. People just don't buy them anymore.
Oh.
Especially...
I like my Mac Mini.
Especially since, well, they're definitely useful and they have a use case, and I don't think they're going anywhere. It's just general population. They're most likely going to buy a MacBook. But if you really, really want a Mac and you have $500, there's a great option for you. So those things still exist. It's just people are buying laptops instead. All right, I wanted to move past the MacBook Air with M3 quickly. There's not much to it. It's really just the same design. They bumped the old wedge design out of the lineup. It is no longer sold new. The M2 is now at the $999 price point, and we have the M3 with the current designs in both sizes, and not much to say about it. It has an M3 chip, can run two displays in clamshell. That's the whole deal.
No, it isn't. It comes in different colors. Don't forget that. That's key. That is. Oh, stop looking at me like that. It's nice to have a color option. I'm bored.
I do like the
silver.
Midnight color. I would buy midnight if I was getting one. But things that aren't coming in blue, the Apple Car.
Oh.
So Apple officially killed this project internally about 10 days ago, just before we recorded last week's episode. And we're still talking about it. The news just can't stop talking about this failed project because there's so much interesting to it. As we said, we would love to see the tell-all book come out in 10 years about how everything going on, but we may not have to wait 10 years because it seems like Bloomberg is waiting outside of Apple Park and just asking people about it because they have a lot of information. A lot of it, because we've been covering this at Apple Insider since 2014, we actually got one of the first scoops. We found the racetrack that they were testing on and eventually purchased. Apple Insider's been, this has been one of our pet projects because we kind of got in early. I wasn't here at the time, but I've been paying close attention myself. And a lot of the details in Bloomberg stories have been ascertained from just the years of this information coming out, but there are new tidbits here. Have you been keeping up with these stories?
Not as much as you. I mean, actually, like you, I wasn't at Apple Insider with the first break, but I remember reading it on Apple Insider, so I've been kind of following it. And I like some of the little tiny bits. I'm hearing complaints of people saying that Apple was just hesitant, I think was the phrase, annoying, but I don't know what they were hesitant about. I mean, cars in general or specific parts of it. I take it you know everything. Spill all.
So I wrote the two stories covering Bloomberg stories because as we do sometimes, if someone else has a scoop, we'll recap a little bit and give you a way back to it. It's just general practices here. Bloomberg's story again is interesting. I didn't want to break down all 10,000 words they wrote on the subject across two pieces, but I give you the general idea. So Project Titan, the first story that they've released last week, you might have already read it already. Employees were calling it, gave it the nickname Titanic Disaster instead of Project Titan because they just expected it to sink and fail and drag everyone down with it.
I cannot believe it's taken me a week to make this connection between Project Titan and Titanic. I just thought whoever said that originally was absurdly over-exaggerating it, because I said to you, nobody's died, had they? But now, I finally get the gag. Okay, I'm officially the slowest man in the world. Okay.
Well, Okay. Don't make me mention the Titan submarine or whatever.
Grief, yes.
Too soon. Okay. So Apple sank, well, this is where this number is coming from. This originated from this report. Apple sank about $10 billion into Project Titan across 10 years. That's $1 billion a year. People have been raving about how this is just an enormous number. It's pocket change for Apple. Let's get that straight. People are, I see the comments and the socials and people just saying, wow, how could Apple sink that much money into something and it'd be such a waste? Well, first of all, Apple, when they started Project Titan, had about $120 billion in cash just sitting around, and they've only spent, and that's only increased since, and then on top of that, only spent $10 million. They could have spent so much more money on this. They could have bought companies. There was so much conversation about buying Tesla, buying Kia, but that's outside of the story. This story is more focused on the employees, and just generally speaking, no one could agree on what was happening. It kind of fell apart. And the part two to this, and if you read the story, I included the lovely Johnny Ive Fiat 600 that he built custom and auctioned off. It has nothing to do with the Apple Car. I just thought it was funny that Johnny Ive built a Fiat 600. This could have been a little bit of what the Apple Car looked like. I'm not sure about the wicker seats, though, if you've seen the photo.
So, hang on. You do things like this as well, except you leave wires hanging out at the end. I bet Johnny Ive didn't have wires hanging out the car afterwards, did he? No?
So this is the fun thing with Johnny Ive's car. So part two of Bloomberg's story covered the other half of this, the executive failure. So the first half was basically how employees felt. They were hired and brought in and quickly discovered they were lost at sea. Nobody knew where this thing was going and called it the Titanic, right? So from the executive side of things, it seemed even worse. The people put in charge of the project. So there was, at one time, the former Tesla lead, whose name is escaping me, who came in and was leading the project, and then it went to Kevin Lynch, and then Johnny Ive was involved heavily at the beginning, and the just shifting from executive to executive, and Tim Cook sitting in the background the entire time just shaking his head and telling them to try again. It's just this story of indecision and hubris that is just very Apple, and again, very company-like. I don't want to emphasize that, oh, wow, Apple, they're terrible. This is what every company deals with. Everyone's struggling to come up with an idea that's going to do the next big thing. So Project Titan started as a vanity project, more or less, for Johnny Ive. They remember Steve Jobs mentioning during a private meeting that Apple could disrupt the car the way they disrupted the phone. And then later, after Apple Watch, Johnny Ive was ready to leave Apple, and this was in 2013, 2014, and they decided to entice him by giving him the car project. So the first concept that they built was basically a Volkswagen bus that was painted solid white with white wall tires and sliding doors that they dubbed the Bread Loaf.
Okay.
It was meant to have level 5 autonomy, and if you needed to take control, don't worry, there's no steering wheel, but there was a Xbox-like game controller. I love how...
I think, in a car crash situation, I'd probably prefer to just call out to Siri to ask her to steer left.
We mentioned last week that there was this infamous demo of a woman being hired to play Siri in a car as they drove around a parking lot. This is that vehicle, and they built a concept of it, and it's never been seen. There's no photographs of it, but it just sounds hilarious to me that it's this glass roof minivan with white wall tires. It just sounds like a fishbowl you ride around in, because you don't face forward, you face each other in what's called club seating, I believe.
Oh, imagine all the family rows that would be even worse when you couldn't just, I'm concentrating on the road kind of thing. Yes, oh. Okay, sorry, that might be very telling about families and things here, but anyway.
Just bringing back the Titan submersible, they also used a game controller. So it's just funny to call back to that Project Titan and the Titanic disaster.
Goodness.
So Johnny Ive leaves Apple, and just all of that goes down. We move on a couple of executives whose name escaped me. There's been so many in charge of this project, or at times just no one in charge of this project. And ultimately we land at Kevin Lynch, who is in charge of the Apple Watch development team. Great.
Yeah.
We've seen him in WWDC stuff. This great character. Whatever, I don't think he was directly involved in this design. It's just the design that landed at his feet while he was in charge. And it was called the I-Beam. It was nicknamed the I-Beam. Can you guess why?
So, it looked like a cursor.
So, that would have been smart, but no. It was a perfect cylinder that was symmetrical end-to-end and lacked a windshield and rear window and only had side windows. It was like a little pill driving around the road.
That's what I was picturing. I was picturing a pill, but you could only see out the side. You couldn't.
They realized later that if you needed to take control of the car and wasn't able to see out of the front, that would be an issue. So they added a windshield later, in hindsight, of course. Because the designers on this just did not think you needed a windshield, because their level 5 autonomy is going to be so good, you would never need to take control of the car. Again, the hubris very much coming out in this.
And you'd never want to just look out and say, oh, we're nearly there, or anything.
Right, yeah. So shortly after, the TV inside of the car with the cameras would tell you.
What am I thinking?
Yes. And of course, they had speakers that piped in audio from outside of the car, rather than, opening a window. But that's fine. All in all, very fun. Those were the only two prototypes that stuck out. There was 5 total prototypes, but it seems the others were mostly vehicle-shaped vehicles. And this is where we get to modern day, about 2019, 2020, where they pull back and they say, okay, instead of level 5, that's decade, if not more, if not impossible. Let's go to level 3, and they start working on basically what is a Tesla Model S, is my assumption. That's not much in the story, but I'm assuming now we're just making a sedan or something. And that's where we get to these last couple of years, where they're really pushing hard. Then they back down from level 3 to level 2. They're ready to buy Kia. They're ready. There was even an offer on the table for McLaren that almost closed.
McLaren. The sports car.
The $340,000 street illegal sports cars, yes.
Okay.
Because again,
do they do those in blue? Because
mostly red. They have a very specific red color that's very popular. Mm. No, so
what can you do?
Yes, it's a fun read. I summarize a little the section about the employees and the executives, but there's so much more to this. If you can go and read those Bloomberg stories in full, they're probably on Yahoo in full text, so you don't have to pay for their paywall. Sorry, Bloomberg, but definitely go give those a read. They're just very interesting stories overall. If you haven't been keeping up with this, it has all the details you might be missing. I just find it all very fascinating.
Yes. Any long project is interesting, and I cannot get enough of the detail behind things, because I think detail reveals the characters. You're saying about the multiple executives and things. You could just see some people looking to advance their own careers, others who are genuinely invested in the design, who's moved in, who's not. The kind of the power plays, I think, are very revealing of personality. And I think generally of corporations as like faceless machines, but then they do things like this where it feels like, no, there are real people doing things there, and suddenly I'm fascinated. Mind you, Epic Games is like a schoolboy at the moment, so maybe I'm wrong, and all corporations are.
Oh, did I lose?
Well, corporations.
I lost you for a second. Go ahead.
Right. Corporations are legally can be treated as individuals, can't they? So perhaps I'm just wrong ever thinking of corporations as faceless automatons. They are. They're just people, like the rest of us.
I think it's fun to personify corporations. There was a while where people were trying to create mascots for every company. That was just a meme for a couple of years, just building humanoid mascots and making them fight on Twitter. It was fun. Fun times.
Wow.
Before the world just was ended by COVID and Elon Musk. But let's move on. And speaking of Epic Games, we have a lot going on with this Digital Markets Act. Apple, you know, the heroine here, the Robin Hood, who's coming in to save us all from these scary, scary third-party app stores and apps that no one should have because terrible security risks and all of that. What's going on over there in the across the pond from your little not EU country?
Well, yeah, I feel like I'm the next door neighbor who's left out of the party, but I'm kind of okay with that on this. I deeply admire the EU. I think Britain should still be in it. Everybody's better together. I think in this one case, for the best of purposes, I don't think we're getting a great result from the EU. I mean, it's good to see a government, government-like organization, being able to impact big technology, that we can't just have the Apples and Googles and Microsoft World doing whatever they like. But
what they're trying to do is good on the surface, but as we found out in the United States and other countries, it is impossible to regulate in a way that you're going to get satisfactory results, because there's always going to be a way to wiggle around what is actually wanted. It's like making a wish to a genie, or a monkey's paw, actually. Like, there's always going to be a catch. They're going to grant you everything you ever wanted, but you're not going to have any hands afterwards or something. It's just so close, but yet so far. And Apple's, so from my perspective, and I'm not in the EU and I'm not a developer, so sorry, but my perspective is Apple's decision making here has been mostly okay. That I forget the name of it, because they have to have a name for everything, but the half euro per app install after a million,
core technology
fee, that was a little egregious. And I'm happy to report that Apple's actually walked back a lot of the stuff. So the stuff that was especially nasty from this DMA response from Apple has mostly been completely walked back. So I'd love to hear what people think of this newer model. Have you heard about Apple's changes?
Yes, because one of them actually really irritated me, I'll admit that. One of them is now that developers who go to the dark side can come back.
Once.
They have one option to come back, yeah. But that was the very first thing I wanted to know from Apple when all of this was announced, and they said so firmly, no. Once you go, you can't come back. And it seems so reasonable, actually, as well, because how can we possibly work out fees and things? So you charge this amount for an app for these weeks, but then those for that week and stuff. And I thought, yes, impossible to do the maths even on it. So I completely believed that. And I just thought that was another reason why developers would be less likely to change over. And now, yeah, you can give it a go, see what you think, and come back. So they had a way. I just feel like...
So now, yes, and it doesn't have to be for any reason. It's an escape hatch of, if you want to come back, you can come back. But if you sign the addendum again, you're stuck forever. There's no coming back. But they have changed a few things. First of all, if you're a legal entity like a corporation and you have multiple developer accounts, previously you would have to... And again, none of Apple's original rules went into place. These changes are in place before they went into effect on March 6th. All that's gone. This is now the new canonical version. It's just the developers who already signed the addendum have to sign it again to update their contracts. But Apple's letting them do that. No issues. But corporations signing up would have to basically sign up every developer account that they owned for the addendum. But now companies like, say, Epic Games can exist with one foot in each pond. So they can be part of the App Store. Well, they're not currently. But a company like Epic Games could be in the App Store and have a separate developer account who makes either an entire marketplace or serves apps on someone else's App Store. Someone like Facebook, for example, who wants to have the Blue app in the App Store, but maybe a VPN in an alternative App Store. So, because they want to collect all of your data with Onavo Connect, if you remember that one.
Yes.
Why do I remember Onavo Connect, but not the executive who ran the Apple Car project? My brain is terrible.
Well, it is, actually, because you're implying that Facebook would do things with data, and I'm shocked at you. Would they ever? Would they do that to us? Come on.
So, the other two changes, of course, the core technology fee is still there, but if you're at 999,000 installs and you're like, man, I'm about to owe Apple 50 grand and this is a free app, what am I going to do? Well, you just pull the plug and you go back to the App Store. So that escape clause, of course, is change number two. And then change number three is there is something called standby letter of credit for $1 million. Mm. There's been a lot of debate over what that actually means, but don't worry, it's not the only option anymore. If you don't have $1 million laying around or can't prove that you're capable of paying it with a certificate from a bank, basically, I think you have to have the money in the bank, and then then Apple can draw from it whenever they feel like, is just how a standby letter of credit works. It's not a great deal because, again, Apple didn't make this too great of a deal. If you want to have an alternative app marketplace, which is necessary in order to distribute apps, you can either, if you're a developer, you can either make your own marketplace or join one. But in order to make one, well, you have to have a lot of money or a lot of clout. So in this case, Apple has added the ability to create a marketplace if a developer's account has existed for 2 years and has an established app business in the EU with more than 1 million first annual installs. So my brain immediately goes to AltStore, which is the distributor of various emulators and such that allows you to play Game Boy games on your iPhone. This, I'm not sure how they're going to get around this, because that the trick here is you need to have an app business with more than 1 million installs. So first, you have to have a developer account and be popular in order to open an app store. So I don't think the AltStore is going to be able to go this route, but they might have they seem to know that they have that standby letter of credit on hand. The developer's been talking about this. They're very sure that they're going to be able to make this app marketplace. But someone who is going to make an app marketplace is SetApp, which is a pretty excellent company. So,
yeah, I like SetApp. MacPaw, Ukrainian company. Good on them. Yes, I'm a long-term SetApp user. Though, obviously, SetApp on the Mac, you know that you can get iPhone apps through SetApp, but it's slightly clunky. They have to be companion to the Mac apps, really. And you go through downloading it from here and QR codes there. So I tried it a couple of times, but there was never an app on there that I felt compelled to use. Mind you, I worked out the other day, I am using 4% of the apps on SetApp. So, yeah, I need to look again at what else is there. And, oh, I was going to say, and this is an opportunity to do it, but of course it isn't. I'm not in the EU. Okay. Well, it's a roller coaster, isn't it? Yeah. This episode is brought to you by Backblaze, the online backup service that brings you peace of mind every day and then incalculable relief some morning when your data is all gone. Shudder at the thought of that. Now, I've been around long enough that I remember when there were many services for consumers and for businesses that would back up your data online, but over the years, they've mostly fallen away. Backblaze hasn't. And over all of those years, at least 10, I think now, it is the service I have been using constantly. For just $99 per year, you sign up your Mac or PC to Backblaze and everything is backed up. Everything on the computer's internal drive and everything connected to that computer permanently. I have a couple of external drives just forever plugged into my Mac Mini in the office, for instance. And last week, Backblaze noticed that I had unplugged one in an office move and just forgotten to plug it back in. Backblaze warned me, this drive, it's missing. It hasn't been backed up. And so obviously I went and plugged it in. And as soon as I plugged it back in, Backblaze started backing it up again. That's how you usually use Backblaze, with it quietly backing up everything online and you never having to give it a thought. It's been that way for over 55 billion files that Backblaze has then restored for customers. If you lose one document, okay, then having Backblaze online means you find it again in an instant. If you lose terabytes of data for any horrible reason, well, you can still find all of it online. But you can also have Backblaze put all of your data on a hard drive and ship it out to you. I've not had to do that yet, but I have restored files. And I have been just generally more relaxed, knowing that everything is safe. Plus, Apple Insider listeners get a fully featured, no-risk free trial at backblaze.com/Apple Insider. Go there, play with it. Start protecting yourself from potential bad times and horrible, horrible data loss. Seriously, start today. backblaze.com/Apple Insider. The day before you lose any data is the infinitely better time to sign up to Backblaze than the day after. And thank you to Backblaze for supporting the Apple Insider podcast.
So, speaking of not being in the EU, you can't just go wade out into the English Channel and hold up your phone and try to ping a server across the way.
No, we've tried many times, but no, it doesn't work.
So Apple actually has a few protections here, and people are a little upset, and they're kind of calling hypocrisy on Apple's part. Are you aware of how they're detecting users and where they are and what they're doing?
I understand that there's a grace period that if you leave the EU, you can still use your EU-only apps for some amount of time. But I don't know what that is. I suppose, as I said, I don't know how they know, but your phone has, sets the time by your location and stuff. So I guess that's how they work, but I don't know the details.
So basically, there's two things that have to happen. First, you have to have an Apple ID set to that country. So you can't just be in the UK with your UK Apple ID and say, I'm going to go to Germany real quick and download some apps. You have to completely change your region for your Apple ID or make a new Apple ID. So that's step one. Step two is a little more complicated. You have to be physically located in the country of an EU country. Anyone, it's fine. Just have to be there physically. And this isn't being done with like location data. They're not following you around. What they're doing is running a location check locally on the device and basically generating a check mark of, are they here or are they not? And all Apple knows, they don't know where you are or what you're doing. All they know is yes or no. They get a yes or no answer. Are they in the EU or not? As long as it says yes, you maintain access to the alt marketplaces. If it says no, you're given about a week before the alternate app marketplace stops working. I don't know, week. We don't know the time frame, but it's probably a week or so. But after a while, even with the alternative app marketplace installed, it will shut down and prevent you from even visiting it, downloading apps, or even updating the apps you have on your phone until you return to the EU.
There's one small out there. Do we know? It won't stop apps actually running.
Can't.
If I've already got one.
If it's downloaded, it will still run, but it will be in the current version forever. So I don't know.
That's not as bad as I thought. But I mean, it's not great, I thought it was worse. But
I don't know how hard it is for you to pop over to France every couple weekends and just, sync with a server there and come back just to update your
marketplace. It's not the main reason people go to Paris, but, it could be. I'd be willing to try. We've got Eurostar, the tunnel. I just don't think I'd remember when I got there that was why I was there. I'd be too busy enjoying myself.
It seems like a lot of work to just download an alternative app store. There's reasons and there's things, but I don't know. Just to reiterate, this is all only on iPhone. Apple only had to do the DMA for the iPhone because the iPhone App Store is one of five app stores that Apple operates. And the EU did not deem the other ones necessary to regulate because of its size. So this is not possible on an iPad. This is not possible on your Mac or Vision Pro or any other device. You're only going to be able to do this on your iPhone currently.
I knew that and I hadn't thought of the implications. So I'm an OmniFocus user. I'm OmniFocus obsessive, really. But part of the worth of it is that it's on my iPhone, my iPad, my Mac, my watch. If that were to be an EU-only third-party thing, I could only have it on the iPhone. I couldn't have it everywhere else.
It depends. Oh. You could probably have like the EU version on your phone and the App Store version on your Mac. And Cloud Sync would probably work because they're working on that from their server side. So they could probably make that happen. But they would be distinctly different app packages. They would not be a universal app anymore. But, yeah, so the DMA, there's a lot going on here. So last thing I wanted to talk about, there's maybe two things. We'll see what we get to. But first, Epic Games went on a bit of a rant.
Yeah.
And Apple retaliated. So first off, what was Mr. Tim Sweeney saying on the Twitter space?
Well, I read the App Insider article that quoted more of a longer statement than Twitter/X. And what I was surprised by, I mean, you're not surprised when Tim Sweeney rants, I'm sorry to say, but he always does. He kind of tune him out a bit. And Epic Games is forever announcing something and then, Apple, terrible, awful stuff. But he was actually quoting some of Apple's responses. And normally when somebody does that in a complaining way, they pick out the bits that support their case. But I'm reading this thinking, That seems quite reasonable of Apple. Yes, Epic does do this. No wonder Apple doesn't trust them. So we got like half the story, and then there was Apple coming out saying things directly. But you know that bit more than I do, don't you?
So Tim Sweeney, maybe not Tim himself, but Epic, and I believe Tim's voice is the voice of Epic, so either or, basically came out in heavy opposition of Apple's response to the Digital Market Act. I wish there was a name for it. I wish Apple had like a name. It's Apple's response to the Digital Market.
Yes.
Like they should call it like EU mode or something. I don't know. But
Apple Calamity.
There you go.
Okay. Say dramatist. Even, sorry. Okay.
Even alternate app marketplaces is a mouthful. So basically Epic came out, and Spotify and other companies too, but Epic was very loud and used very just hostile language of hot garbage, horror show, malicious compliance. These are the terms he was throwing around. I won't get too much into direct quotes because I don't have them in front of me. But yes, so it was just very much the usual kind of Epic rant from Tim Sweeney and co. about Apple being so unfair because they don't get to be a monopoly and Apple does. And they just really wish to be in Apple's chair, and they just want the EU to fire Tim Cook and put Tim Sweeney in charge of Apple. If they could get away with it, I believe that would be their goal. So Apple responded to this, and everyone's kind of calling this a breach of trust from Apple. They're expecting heavy litigation from the EU on this, and I want to know your opinion. But basically, Apple said, you guys are being just complete, well, I won't say any mean words, but you're being awful, and so we're going to, you know that little Sweden account that you just opened? We're just gonna get rid of that. You no longer have a Sweden account in the EU. So no more Epic App Store. No, sorry, you're just not untrustworthy. So let's get a direct quote here. We have
verifiably untrustworthy. Is the phrase.
Epic's egregious breach of its contractual. I love it when Apple gets saucy here. So their language gets so. They have a lot of adjectives. Epic's egregious breach of its contractual obligations to Apple led courts to determine that Apple has the right to terminate any or all of Epic Games' wholly owned subsidiaries, affiliates, or entities under the Epic Games control at any time and at Apple's sole discretion. In light of Epic's past and ongoing behavior, Apple chose to exercise that right. Strong words. Yeah. So Apple terminated this account. People are a little mad. They think this is, you know, Deus ex machina, God's hands coming down to take control of the situation, and Apple needs to be regulated in a way that doesn't allow them to do this. What's going on here? What do you think?
Well, I'm going to sound like an Apple apologist here, but I'm kind of on Apple's side in this because their logic is, having set out to break contracts before, Epic Games will likely do it again. And they did actually ask, they gave Apple a chance, excuse me, they gave Epic Games a chance. They said, basically, convince us. And although we don't know what Epic Games said back, it wasn't sufficient.
Right.
And so Apple then did this. And what could Epic, apart from a pinky promise, I can't think of anything Epic Games could do to say that we won't do it again. Since you remember, all of this stuff with Epic started when they claimed that Apple had unfairly kicked them out, but actually that was several months campaign.
Yeah, they spent millions of dollars to make a video promoting the fact that they broke the rules in order to get Apple to kick them off the App Store.
They broke them on our behalf for the little person. I think that was the logic. I can't remember. I mean, nonsense anyway, but yes.
They're angry at Apple's
I wouldn't trust them.
Malicious compliance, but they're being just malicious. Like, there's no other term to it. They're just being mean, and they expect Apple to sit back and take it. And I think, so what Apple basically asked for was basically, more or less a promissory note. Just say in legal terms, so we can come back and cite it later in court when it's inevitably happens, that you promise you'll be good this time. And all Tim Sweeney, quote unquote, said was, trust us. And that's obviously not good enough. Yeah. So Apple's just keeping them out. And this is going to turn into another 20-year lawsuit. And I'm going to have to keep talking about Tim Sweeney and Epic Games until the sun explodes. So, speaking of businesses, go ahead.
One thing I think is interesting. So I'm just the sequence here, because I remember we ran a news story that Epic Games had got their developer account, and then this happened. I just picture Apple's treading so carefully with all of its lawyers through all of this, because it knew this is the reaction it would get, and that there is a potentially legal issue here that as of now, the EU has regulatory powers to fine Apple for non-compliance. Mm-hmm. So if anybody can make a good case that they're not complying, now is the time to make it. So on the one hand, I think Apple were very, very careful. And I also think Epic Games is probably delighted that if this was going to happen, it happened on basically the day that EU can take over the case. And the EU has asked for more details. I mean, what more details can you get from Apple other than duh and duh? But this episode is brought to you by Fast Growing Trees. Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the US with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the US? I'm not in the States, but friends are. And what I wanted to do is to tell you that a friend I bought a plant for is so very happy with what she got. Well, actually, she is very happy. But what she's very happy about is just trying to choose from those 10,000 different kind of plants. I mean, I have told her she can get, you know, she can actually grow lemon, avocado, olive, or fig trees even inside her home. And then that's just on top of the wide variety of houseplants that are available. But if it's fun and she's having a really good time looking through this enormous range, well, then when you finally made your decision, Fast Growing Trees then makes it fast and easy to order online, after which your plants are shipped directly to your door within 1 to 2 days. And when my friend chooses what she would like, she gets the Fast Growing Trees 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee. I love that phrase, Alive and Thrive. Plus, they offer free plant consultation forever. Right now, they also have the best deals online, up to half off on selected plants. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off when using the code AppleInsider at checkout. That's an extra. It's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code AppleInsider at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code Apple Insider. Offer is valid for a limited time. Do tell them we sent you too. And thank you to Fast Growing Trees for supporting the Apple Insider podcast.
And we already know that the EU, the European Commission, is no friend of Apple. Because as all of this is going on, I can't remember the exact timeline, but it could have been minutes apart, honestly, because it all happened so close together. The European Commission levied a $2 billion fine against Apple for being, well, I'm not exactly sure because their arguments are not great, but they're mad at Apple for controlling the digital music market and fined them $2 billion and needs them to make the market better so Spotify can happily compete. Even though Spotify is the biggest music streamer in the world, has more than half of the marketplace. Apple's like 4% in fourth place in the EU. And yet the European Commission landed on this after a decade worth of Spotify living at the European Commission's office, begging them to do something about Big Bad Apple and their mean app store taking 30%. And the argument basically landed on Spotify making, and this worked out, customers don't know how to subscribe to Spotify, and Apple won't let us tell them how. So this ruling is derived entirely from that argument. Nothing else. And Apple owes a big, well, not a big fine, but a fine. It's big in terms of Beats. Do you remember how much Apple paid for Beats music to create Apple Music to compete with Spotify in the first place?
I know it was the biggest acquisition they ever made.
And still ever.
And I can't remember the number.
$3 billion.
Goodness.
So this fine is nearly the size of their largest acquisition to date, in a situation where they began competing with Spotify. And now Spotify, again, is just angry, just like Epic, that they're not the absolute monopoly and can't have every red penny. Even though Spotify fails to make a profit, even though they don't pay their artists fair commission, it's all just back to poor little Spotify. And it's just...
You see
this case with Spotify, and you can't help but look at Apple and Epic and think, man, Apple's about to get burned terribly because of their decisions with Epic.
you've said in the past that you're an Apple fanboy, and I've kind of enjoyed you saying that because I've been called that, and in comparison to you, I felt maybe I'm not. But in this case, we're sounding so very pro-Apple. One very specific reason why I am in this case is recently, I can't remember which stage this is at, Spotify put out a notice saying that Apple made it impossible for users to subscribe to Spotify through the iPhone app. And what is the strongest word we're allowed to say on a podcast? Because that is so totally not true. Spotify chose not to have this because they were going to have to pay a fee. And you understand that completely, that they don't want to give up some of their profits. Totally reasonable, totally understandable, arguable, but understandable. But pretending that Apple has actually blocked them, I imagine that's the kind of language they're using with the EU regulators. And it's so demonstrably not true that it actually... Why am I angry about one corporation over another? But it riles me.
In the last decade, Apple has given every inch to Spotify, every request that they have made, other than just giving them total control of being the default music player on Apple Music, which I think Spotify wants. They want that and not to pay Apple. So they want to be the on the home screen when you buy an iPhone and not to give Apple any money for that privilege. Even though I think Google pays Apple, I don't know, trillions of dollars, whatever absurd amount of money to be the default search engine. Maybe if Spotify gave them some of the money they don't have, they could be on Apple's home screen.
Yeah. Why is Spotify not making
a lot
of money?
Well, that's actually easy. This is actually, this is fun. So they don't make money. Okay, I can hear the emails. They were profitable one time in 20 years. Okay, sure. They made a profit once. All of their money comes from VC capital investors, making sure that they don't go under. Because Spotify is very popular and it's a useful tool. It's a great app. It's a good alternative to Apple Music. Don't get me wrong. If you use it, good for you. The problem with Spotify is they have a free tier that doesn't make them enough money. They haven't monetized it well enough yet with ads. So you do get ads, and anyone who listens to Spotify knows that it pops in every now and then telling you to go eat at Panera Bread. Fine.
It used to be every three songs. I remember when I tried it out. I don't know what it is now.
It might still be that, or it might just be algorithmically altered. Hard to say. I haven't used Spotify in years. I used it briefly when I was testing it alongside Beats Music and eventually Apple Music. But I just haven't touched it. It didn't appeal to me in a lot of ways. It's designed. Anyway, so staying on topic, Spotify doesn't make money because they don't charge enough. So their actual fees for paid tiers aren't enough to cover the actual streamed hours of people who are happily just have Spotify running for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for free in their homes, even with ads playing, just continuously running. And every single song, whether it's paid for by a premium user or a free user, ends up costing them the same amount of money, and then they pay the bare minimum without legal trouble to artists, and sometimes just don't pay them at all and end up in legal trouble, end up getting sued. They've been sued by many artists because of their inability to pay or willingness to go to court to get out of millions of dollars in streaming fees. So all of that said, their free tier is so huge. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but you guys know Spotify's free tier is 90% of its market, and everyone streaming isn't paying the price by listening to ads. So they're not making their money back, and the premium tiers are not subsidizing that cost. So they are never able to make a profit. So actually, every time someone signs up for Spotify and their active user number goes up, they lose money per user. It's actually crazy. That's why they pivoted to podcasts and paid Joe Rogan some ungodly amount of money instead of paying artists that amount of money. They paid Joe Rogan to talk into a microphone because they already paid the costs for him. And as long as someone's listening to Joe Rogan on Spotify and not music, that's good for Spotify. Wow. That's why they pivoted to podcasts and it failed miserably. They still didn't make any money because people didn't use Spotify to listen to podcasts. So now they've pivoted to audiobooks. As long as people are listening to the audiobooks, which they pay for one time, it's paid for, and we no longer owe commission on it, no matter how long they listen to that audiobook, put them on there with, you know, every Lord of the Rings that they can or whatever, every hour they spend listening to an audiobook is a minute listening to Spotify. Imagine if Netflix lost money for because people watch TV shows. That's the situation Spotify's in, and they're trying to find ways to get people to continue using Spotify, to continue paying for it, but not to use it for its primary purpose, which is listening to music.
Well, I can see why they think it's all Apple's fault.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Apple clearly is the failure of their business. If they didn't have to pay Apple, wait a minute. They don't pay Apple. They actually don't pay Apple one single red cent, except for $100 a year to have a developer account.
Yes. It sounds like they struggle to meet that threshold, though. But okay.
So I've talked a lot.
Business model.
Yes. So I just want you to let me know what do you think's going on? Like, what can Apple do to satisfy Spotify at this point? Because do you know all the? I was going to get to it, and we diverted on why Spotify loses money. Do you know what Apple has done to give Spotify leeway on iOS in the last decade?
You said that about them giving it to every request. Apart from, there was one, I remember, that Spotify wanted to be on HomePods and couldn't. And then Apple did fix it so they could, but Spotify couldn't be bothered to do it. I know that one.
So Spotify, you can set, and even more so now, as of this new update, you can actually just go in and say, default all music requests to Spotify on HomePods, iPhones, iPads, Macs.
Wow.
Spotify has to support it. They don't. They... Spotify, Apple gave Spotify the ability to be a reader app and direct users to sign in and not have any functionality. They didn't go that route. They gave them the free tier. So, oops, I guess.
Right. So a reader app is like the way Amazon's app works.
Netflix is more apt.
Netflix.
Yes.
Right.
Netflix doesn't work unless you sign in. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
And that's what David Hanemeyer Hansen, is that his name? Daniel and DHH over at he did the programming language at,
Hey Email,
there we go. Ruby on Rails, that guy, he wants reader eligibility for his email and other apps, and Apple just says, no, you're not that kind of app, you're not a content app, you're an email app, so you can't have reader. But Spotify was given that, so Spotify could actually be on the App Store, have an entire business model outside of the App Store, and they still don't take advantage of it because they offer a free tier. Sorry, Spotify, your own business model is defeating you. So Apple's other commiseration, more recent, but still, you can have an outside link to your subscription service, which came a few months ago. And that's why the European Commission said too little too late, fining you $2 billion in damages for up till now. But now Spotify can have a link directly to its website and promote the prices of its tiers for different subscriptions. So that's where we are today. And there's been more to it. Apple really has given Spotify a lot of leeway. They've done everything except make it able to just replace the Apple Music app on iPhone. And I think that's what Spotify wants to happen and still not owe them any money for it. So it's a long, winding battle, decade long. And Apple sees this as just, it's wild because, yes, people, companies go to regulators all the time. And what's the word I'm looking for? Where they pay money for people to go
lobbying.
There we go. So Apple is a huge lobbying company. They understand it, but Spotify basically whispering in the EC's ear this entire time, this last decade, having hundreds of meetings is unprecedented. And the European Commission should actually see this as a red flag rather than supporting them. But because Spotify is based in the EU, they are going to side with them every single time. So that's where we are with all of that.
Well, to be fair, you can understand the EU siding with one of its member state companies, at least first. I mean, I'm sure the US Department of Justice would back an American company. But you would think then, presented with the facts, facts are difficult in this kind of thing. But I had no idea what you told me. All that stuff you told me about Spotify's business model, I had no clue. But now you've told it to me, I get it. So I'm not going to be swayed by arguments of bad Apple not letting us do things, because now I know. So I would expect the EC and the EU to basically cop onto themselves. That might be a very British phrase but you get the idea.
We got one last topic, and I want to spend a few minutes on that if we have time. But before we go, I want to go ahead and give a prediction for everyone. So let me know when this happens, because I feel like it's going to happen. So if Spotify wants to have users using its app without using licensed music that they have to pay for, the next step, say it with me, artificially generated music. If this doesn't happen in the next year, William, I will buy you a sandwich. I can't get you an iPad though. But
okay.
I guarantee that is the next move of, oh, just, you know, get a Spotify premium account and come in and, you know, generate your own music by describing the sound you want to make and we'll generate it for you. But because it's not actual licensed music, you made it, we don't have to pay anyone a dime, and share it with your friends and they can listen to it too. And that way, as long as everyone's listening to each other's generated music and sharing it on TikTok, we're not paying one red cent. And that will actually help their business model and be terrible for the actual music industry. Because Spotify actually, I can honestly say it, worse than Napster, worse than pirating. Spotify is the worst thing that ever happened to music. Just going to put that out there.
Well, I would like to just say for the record, ham and cheese sandwich on Italian bread, please. That's what I would like. Yeah.
So
I can well imagine, with if that feature is introduced, and I think you're right, it sounds like an inevitability, there will be people who will really love it and people who will make fantastic music through it. But there's going to be other people who try it for an hour and basically end up saying, please make me a song that's a bit like Taylor Swift. And then they'll find it's not like Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of actual Taylor Swift music. So they'll go away from it. I think that's the route we're going to go.
Right. It'll be mediocre as the other AI initiatives, but in a cool way. It is interesting to type in text and get an image out. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not anti-AI, dumb term. I will always be against it. But yes. I'm not anti-AI, the technology. I just don't like the idea that's spreading that it's going to replace people and all of that. I think that's stupid. I think it's a good tool that people can use to be better and more productive.
Yes.
But
just for writing, it comes down to this. If you can't be bothered to write it and you get AI, why should I be bothered to read it? Can I not just get my AI to read it instead and have them go off? Didn't Douglas Adams have a thing about video recorders that watch TV for you so you didn't have to? It's that kind of notion just popped into my head there.
So one last topic, and I know we're running a little long here, but I do want to cover this in a little bit of detail. Maybe we can spend about 10 minutes on it before we go. Mm-hmm. Apple Vision Pro, we have passed the 1 month mark. I think I teased it a little bit last week. My 1 month review is finally in.
Right. Let me just stop you there, because you're never going to say what I would say about that review. I read it just before we started recording. It is superb. You know, I was expecting that you would write, because I knew you like it. I thought it'd be a very positive piece. Or I thought maybe we hadn't spoken in a week. Maybe something had happened and you'd be totally disillusioned. And no, it's really even-handed. Very bad bits, very good bits. It made me come away thinking like I understood this thing. So it's a superb piece of writing there, and I knew you wouldn't say it, so I have. So there. Now, you were going to say.
Well, thank you. I have actually been getting pretty good response from this. I'm excited by that. But I really just poured my experience into this in a way that's hard to articulate, because again, there's so much to talk about. I could write 3 more 5,000-word articles on this thing right now. There's just so much to discuss. So picking out the best parts and putting it into a 1 month late discussion was very difficult, but I think I landed on what I needed to. And I set up the premise at the top. We're going to basically write about using the device, the app ecosystem, and migrating workflows to the device. So if you read my first review and you're interested in, because that the first review is more or less, this is what it is as a piece of hardware. This one is, this is how it works with software and how I've integrated it into my life and my workflows. And I've actually been using it for work. So do you have any questions, first off, of any topic, anything, or best, worst, anything like that?
Well, I can tell you the first thing is if you could write 2 more 5,000-word things, I'd read those. So off you pop, do those. The thing that I think kind of lanced out at me was, even though I knew you were using it for work, you've calculated that you used it for at least 150 hours. And also, I think the fact that you look forward to putting on and things, I can't think of anything that I've liked for a month that I was still that keen on. I mean, you like things and they continue to be good, but you still feel like you've got kind of almost new toy excitement over it. And I'm fascinated by how it keeps you engaged, even though, as you point out, there are fewer apps around that you would like. And there's one thing you said about Control Center that sounded dreadful.
Right. So if anyone read this when it first came out, I forgot the word carrot existed and spelt it like a vegetable. So that was fun. Yes, but I fixed that since. That was amusing. I'll admit to that. That's fine. Whatever. Who cares? But yes, there's a little carrot downward facing. I don't know if there's a different word for the downward one versus the upward one, but it's an arrow that points down in a circle. You see it when you look up with your eyes, not your head. You have to basically look to the top of your skull, and a little thing will appear that you tap to open Control Center. It is one of the most frustrating interactions I've ever had in software. It's inconsistent. There's a bug in Vision OS 1.0 that'll probably be gone in 1.1. That's why this is such an interesting review, because so much of this could change tomorrow if 1.1 comes out. I really wanted to get this out because I think it's a good snapshot of where Vision Pro is 1 month in. And I'm glad that everything aligned for me to get this text out now and not after 1.1 came out, because now we're going to be talking about what's next for Apple Vision Pro and the first update coming in a few days. But the carrot, it'll just disappear in software. And sometimes if you look up and you don't see it, but you know it should be there and you tap, it'll still open Control Center because the software just didn't render it. There's a window overlapping bug, and anyone wearing Vision Pro knows this. If you put all your windows nice and tidy, close together where they're nearly touching and it's very beautiful, sometimes the area calculation for what the safe area around a window goes awry, and they act like they're ready to move, like you're gripping them, and it makes everything within a couple of inches of the window go fuzzy. And if you've worn one of these, you know what I'm talking about. When you're moving things around, it makes the other windows go transparent. This happens in stasis. Everything's standing still, but now whatever window you're focused on, everything around it is getting kind of cut through by this window, and it's broken. If that bug is happening and Apple Vision Pro decides that you looked just high enough for the carrot to appear, a giant circular sphere of invisibility will cut through whatever content you're looking at, movie, window, whatever. And it's just like, hey, here I am. Here, I'm the carrot. Instead of it just appearing the way it's supposed to over content. Because again, those safe borders are just broken in that bug, and you have to restart the device to get it to go back to normal. So there's a lot of first edition hardware, first edition software things going on here. But I wanted to reiterate at the top and here, I love this device. It's amazing. Mm. Bugs aside, I want to use it all the time within reason. I do take breaks. Don't worry, guys. I'm not hurting my health or anything. But yes, when I have it off, I'm thinking about, well, when I go back, I want to do this. I need to check this app. I need to do this thing. There's all these cool... It just feels like I haven't had enough time with it, even though I've spent all my time working. But when I'm working, I'm working. I'm not exploring. So I have to balance the work with the interest. I have to find these features in my own time, and it's just been intriguing to spend every moment I can outside of work and in work, outside of all of my other hobbies and my family duties and other things, trying to balance this thing out. And yes, it's like being a kid with a new video game console and wondering what you're going to do next in the Pokemon game you have sitting waiting at home while you're sitting in school. It's that kind of excitement, and it doesn't happen often today with technology.
No.
But there are bugs, there are issues, there are weird little things that I wish Apple would change. I can't wait for more accessories. I can't wait for third parties to get involved. I can't wait for all the apps that are going to be amazing. That moment that hasn't happened yet, but that moment when there's multiple productivity tools, multiple games, and all these things are coming out within a few days of each other, where social is just going to be a buzz with everyone being like, did you see this app? Did you see this feature? Oh, this app just got this update. Everyone should steal this update. That's coming soon to Vision Pro, and I can't wait to be a part of that. Mm. So all of that said, great so far for a month. It's still very much a version one device, the good and the bad as a whole. Absolute perfect get for me. Like, I do not regret this purchase.
Nice. Oh, sorry, one more thing. Sorry, I know you were saying about time, but one more thing. One thing, why am I so shocked by this? But you said that there are accessories on sale for the Apple Vision Pro that are clearly just rebranded MetaQuest accessories or something.
Yes.
I was my eyes went wide at that. I mean, are they even workable between the two? The bags the same size or anything?
It's, well, they are wearable face computers, and MetaQuest is pretty big. It's actually kind of like the Apple, the PlayStation VR 2. They're these big plastic boxes. Yes, they might weigh less, but they're large hollow spheres that need cooling for their not as good chipsets and all of that. Apple's is actually rather compact, so a lot of the carrying cases and stands that work with these things fit the Vision Pro because it's actually more compact in its construction. Wow. Apple didn't waste any space with Apple Vision Pro. It's just heavy, so because of its materials. And people are arguing, oh, they should have used plastic. I don't think so. It might have saved a little bit, but I think part of the metal and glass construction, it also, people forget everything is calculus here. It's part of the sound reverberation for the audio pods to be able to echo through the metal containment. It's part of the heat sink for the processors to be able to sync to metal and glass surfaces because they're better at conducting heat than plastic is. It's all part of it. So Apple couldn't just do something, but people love that word. Just, why didn't they just do this?
Yes.
I stand by the fact this is the best version of what we could get at this price point today, and there's nothing they could have done differently to make it lighter, better, or faster in any way. I honestly believe that. But as far as the accessories go, I wouldn't recommend buying MetaQuest cases because it's not going to be form fitting. There might actually be a little wiggle room space, and then your Apple Vision Pro is just bouncing around in there. Wait for the bespoke cases. Wait for the cheaper cases. They're coming. I mean, there's an $80 Spigen case. Just go get that one. That's built for Apple Vision Pro. There's third-party straps already. The Knit Solo Knit Band already has someone making leather versions of it, which is weird. I don't know how I feel about that. But there's a lot of stuff happening in this space. And yes, it's low volume, but I think it's interesting. And as long as developers are interested and as long as accessory makers are interested in something, they're going to do it even if they don't sell that many. And it takes more than 30 days to develop a brand new app concept or a brand new piece of accessory that's going to revolutionize how you wear Apple Vision Pro. The Daft Punk helmet is going to take a few months to put together for you to insert the Vision Pro into. So we'll see.
Okay. Sorry, that's an image that's not going to leave my head now. Okay. It's exciting, I think, being at the start of a journey
It's also confusing, contradictory. There's a lot of issues going on with developer relations. I know I'm in my own little echo chamber where I follow a lot of developers, happy and sad. So it's not all good and it's not all bad. Don't let the people saying Apple hates developers and developers don't want to build apps for this thing, because that's not necessarily true. But there is a piece of that is true. And there's a part of my review where I really get into Apple Vision Pro feels like a product that Apple should have done more behind closed doors before they released it, and they just didn't. Maybe out of secrecy, and that's fine. Apple secrecy gets in their way a lot, and I prefer it. It's nice to be surprised, but their evangelism is lacking. They need to be knocking on doors. Why wasn't there a major EA or some other, just any big game company? Why isn't there a major game company software that costs $20 launching on Apple Vision Pro? Where's Capcom and Resident Evil? Where's Beat Saber from Meta? Why is there not at least one or two major titles on this thing? Which people buy VR headsets today and they understand them as gaming headsets. Apple could have leaned into at least a piece of that market with some offering promising, this does work with games, not just Fruit Ninja. Buy our headset and more are coming. And then on the other side of that coin is entertainment. 3D is amazing. It's the best 3D you've ever seen in your life. You've never seen 3D like this in a theater. I owned passive TVs, active TVs, and 3D to put in your home. None of it looked as good as this. This is the best possible 3D experience you could have. High resolution, full brightness, 3-dimension video. Well done. Amazing. On a 150-foot screen over a lake. Can't beat it. But that content's great, but what's even better is the true native Apple Vision Pro content made with immersive experiences. But guess what? Apple is in control of the technology that makes those because they had to basically invent new ways to film video to make them. And they have more content on hand. We saw it in the sizzle reel. swimming with sharks, visiting mountains and oceans and flying over cities from a bird's eye view. Where is it? 1 month later, why do we not have at least episode two of the four experiences that are there? What is Apple doing in this space to make it better for the people who already have it? And aren't we hearing, why isn't there at least a plug? Oh, coming in 6 months, this video game, this company is working on it. It's coming. Just be patient. Apple needs to get out of that secretive habit, at least with its media efforts, because services, people like to be teased. They like to know what's coming, not 2 days away, but a few months out. The fact that one of the best nature documentaries I've watched in a long time, the sound one that Apple TV just came out with, Soundscapes or something. They recorded sounds with high fidelity microphones, and Tom Hiddleston narrates. It's recently out on Apple TV Plus. We knew it was coming for a while because of like an early like Get announcement where they purchased the rights. But why wasn't there a trailer or a sizzle for that until 2 days before it launched on Apple TV Plus? Why did I have to find out about it because I have this job? No one knows that thing exists, but it's amazing. It's beautiful. And the sound coming from the HomePods hooked up to my TV, amazing. But what is Apple doing over there? Their evangelist portion of their company needs to be stepped up, I think. Not just that, but they need to get better at promoting their own things. Why does it feel like Apple has to wait for a come-to-Jesus moment every time they want to announce something? Oh, we're going to have this big event that's going to cost $1 million to film with all these drone shots of Apple Park, and that's the only way we can ever announce anything. And yes, I've just been proven wrong. The MacBook Air was announced with a leaflet on a website, sure. But they need to meet in the middle. They need to be able to do more often, is all I'm saying. That's it this week on the Apple Insider Podcast. Sorry for me rambling a little bit there, William, but I think
Didn't ramble. I asked you. Of course. I wanted to, because remember, I can't get the Apple Vision Pro. So every time I get to see you, talk to you, I pump you for information. So thank you for that. I feel like I'm living vicariously through you.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. Of course, as always, you can find me on Mastodon. That's the best way to get me. I will respond to Twitter if you tag me there. And you can always email me from the website. The emails are posted at the top of every article. And William, where can people find you?
Well, much the same with emails. I like that the best. So, yes, you can William@appleinsider.com. But I'm also on YouTube on a thing called 58 Keys and lots of comments and stuff on there where I have a very nice time talking to people. So that'd be good.
And if you like hearing me run my mouth, you can always find me and Andrew talking on HomeKit Insider about Apple Home-related things and technologies you can use to improve your house and automations. As always, try to go and leave a review on the Apple Podcast app or your podcast app of choice. That's always appreciated. We like to get word out there of our conversations, and go check out our show notes. Plenty of links in there, even things that we didn't get to talk about because we ran a little long talking about the EU today. And I would like to thank our sponsors one more time, Backblaze and Fast Growing Trees. And we'll talk to you guys next week.